friends, and welcome to a very, very, very special edition of the Kings of Anglia podcast, brought to you in association with John Banks Honda. Yes, we've got a sponsor. That's not the reason this is very special. This is very special because it's looking at the exclusive Marcus Evans interview that the man to my right hand, Dr. Steve Stuart Watson, secured. It was in print the last 2 days. It's been smashing online to bits. And we're here to give you, as we like to do on this podcast, a peek behind the curtain, a look inside said interview. My name is Mark Heath. I'm your host. I'm extremely irrelevant today. Hutchie's here as well, Andy Warren.
I'm irrelevant as
well. We are passengers here today. It's a Dr. Watson show. Basically, I always have a go at you about your long, winding answers. Today, knock yourself out, mate. Yeah. Talk as much as you want. We are merely here to chip in every now and then. Okay. So, this will please you as well, Stu. There's going to be no general banter. There's none of that stuff. We're getting straight into the interview. The interview, as I say, dropped in two parts in print, Wednesday and Thursday, past, present, future. And we put the full transcript, all 7,000 words of it, went online at 5:30 a.m. Wednesday.
I think it was
morning.
Nearer 8,000 in the end. Yeah, it was a long old read, wasn't it?
Did you not fancy coming on the podcast?
No, maybe this is a baby step towards that. Has that got to be the ultimate aim for this?
I'd love to have Mark.
Maybe we'll kind of have some middleman guests and we'll build up to that.
Absolutely.
No. First of all, Andy, Marcus finished our interview by saying how sad he was that you couldn't make it. The request did go out to both of us.
That's a shame. That's lovely.
I think he wanted to sort of he wanted both of us to see that he wasn't some sort of Bond villain that was, you know. I think the phrase he used in an email, I'm told, is can we get Andy and Stu to come so that they can see I'm not a monster with three heads, was the phrase he used to the press officer.
So, didn't mention me. Awkward. So, before we get going, I've got to say, for your next new or used vehicle, visit johnbanks.co.uk. And please do that, as I say. Please go out and got a bit of cash burning a hole in your pocket. Go and buy yourself a new Honda. That'd be tremendous. Really help us actually in this sponsorship deal.
You know what? Anyone that goes out and buys a Honda,
yeah,
instantly becomes a friend of the show.
Ah, what higher goal could you have than being a friend of the show? All you have to do is spend 10 to 15 grand on a new car.
I think they do. Do they do used cars as well?
You're right. For your next new or used vehicle, visit johnbanks.co.uk. There you go. So they do used cars as well. So you're looking at a few grand maybe just to become a friend of the show. But I digress, Stewie. Yeah. To get back onto the interview, too much banter, I could see you were taking a very dim view. So, before we get to the actual interview itself, can we start with the process of securing said interview? Now, I want to take you back to 2011, when you became chief football writer here. You were my first appointment as sports editor, one of the best things I've ever done in my life. And literally from day one, I think you started in June, July 2011, you immediately started chasing interview with Mr. Evans. So if you could just give us a little idea of the background, how long it's taken to get this interview, how you secured it. You have actually spoken to him before. We did an interview, I think it was a playoff season, wasn't it? On the phone.
It was, yeah. That was on the phone after that sixth place finish. Obviously the mood was a lot better then. There was a sense of the club moving in the right direction again. So that was done over the phone, over speakerphone. He was abroad actually, and I was in the boardroom at Ipswich. So, yeah, it was how to badge this up first and foremost. It was the first face-to-face interview with a independent media organisation, which is quite a mouthful. We can throw On the Record in there as well, because there's been a few people claiming that they've met Marcus before, which they have. Nigel Pickover and Terry Hunt, the former editors of our two papers, The Anglian and The Star, met him when he first bought the club back into 2007, but that wasn't for publication, his quotes. Likewise, Mark Murphy at the BBC Suffolk, I believe, met him a few years ago, but again, that was not for publication. So I'd interviewed him before over the phone, so this was the first face-to-face proper interview, I would say, 11 years into his ownership, which is quite remarkable, really. Yes, you're right, I've been asking the question, of course I have, from day one, really. It's become a bit of an open-ended request, really. You know, I wasn't going to be asking every week, but there was always the reminder to the club's press officers, to Ian Milne whenever I saw him, you know where I am, we still want to speak to Marcus. Whenever you think it's the right time, then I would hope that that you would come to me. And I'd been given gentle assurances that if it ever happened, that you know, they would look towards us and myself, and thankfully that proved to be the case.
Before we get to interview it yourself, what was the reason for him not doing it before now? I know this is part of the interview, but obviously 8 years is a long time to have to wait to interview the owner of a football club.
Yeah, so obviously he's given an on-the-record answer to that, in terms of he said he's never felt that it's about him. Football ownership is about sort of doing things quietly in the background and leaving managers to manage. You know, I think he's very much of the opinion that their role is to deal with the communication side of things. And there's a lot to admire about that, if you think about it, in terms of you look at some other owners at other football clubs that have probably spoken too much and been too outspoken at times and have been too interfering with their managers. You know, you only have to look at Cardiff with changing the main shirt colour to red and selling off sponsorship of stadiums and things like that. So I don't think any Ipswich fan wanted that end of the scale. But I think as time has gone on and if things have got increasingly stagnant at this football club, that there has been a need to hear from the man at the top. And that's when you need to, in times of trouble, that's when you need to hear from the main man. And we've made that clear as time has gone on. And I think, you know, Mark, that has dawned on Marcus in the last year or so that he needs to fill that communication void. Basically, the way that things deteriorated between Mick and the fans, you know, he realised that he needed to step up and maybe do a bit more of the communication side of things himself.
Yeah. And just before we get to said interview, I also want to stress again, a peek behind the curtain. You don't just walk into an interview like this. I mean, you did a lot of research and preparation. We went and sat over at the coffee shop down the road and had quite a long chat about how to structure it, questions, you know, should be asked, how many questions you might get, all that sort of stuff. I don't want anyone thinking, listening to this, that it was just a case of Suey's kind of wandering in and going, right, Marcus, what you got to say, sort of thing. I
mean, yeah.
There was a lot of work that went into the process.
Yeah, in the actual interview, I mean, years in the making in terms of getting it. I'm a bit more of a softly diplomacy kind of guy of kind of, at times you question whether doing the right thing pays dividends, whether, you know, nice guys come last, and whether, you know, sometimes you try and be fair by people, you try and be objective, and you're not quite sure whether you get the comeback on that. So this for me was sort of validation that I feel like we've tried to go about things the right way with our coverage, in terms of being fair and objective and balanced. And thankfully, I think the club have recognised that. You know, I did a verdict piece on Evans, time to go, Marcus, but you already knew that recently, off the back of the Accrington defeat it was, and I was expecting a bit of a minor backlash from the club, and actually they said, no, do you know what, that was pretty fair. So I think that went a long way to getting the deal over the line. But yeah, in terms of actually preparing for the interview, you guys know we all put our collective heads together, and you don't know how long you're going to get. Yeah, so you want to make all your questions count, but there's a knack to interviewing in terms of sort of, you know, both parties feeling comfortable to start with, and sort of easing your way into it and then building up. So yeah, we all had a long chat. I spoke to a lot of people inside and outside the club about what to ask and stuff, and ultimately I'm pretty pleased with how it went. Of course, there's loads of stuff that I could have pressed him harder on, questions that we could have asked, but it was just under an hour, and I think we broadly covered most of the topics that I think needed covering.
Right, let's get into the meat of the interview, shall we? Andy, have you got anything to say before we settle back?
No.
No? So grab your popcorn. Stuart, I want you to paint pictures with your words. I'm taking you back to last Thursday morning.
Yeah.
It was. Stuart came in suited and booted, looking very smart indeed. Best clobber on, best tackle on.
What tie did you wear?
It was just a blue tie. I thought, yeah, club colours.
Our friend Mike Bacon, the big porker himself, was very complimentary of the way you looked. So you went off. The interview was done at Portman Road.
Yeah.
And again, I'm going to ask you to be very specific with all this. Paint pictures.
Okay.
So you go off. You're met by who at Portman Road?
So Thursday morning, yeah, dusted off my suit, you're right, my Ted Baker suit, my best, the best of all my suits. It's my showstopper.
Best bobber, yeah.
It's a bit of a summer suit, I'll be honest. Think sort of spring, summer wedding, light blue. Probably wasn't really appropriate for a business meeting per se, but I feel good in it, so I put that on.
That's important. You look good, you know, as well, my friend.
Striding tall, striding round.
Dress the part, feel the part, be the part. Yeah. You know, that sort of mentality. So off I went. Thursday morning, I thought it was going to be a sort of an evening job right up until the day before, and then I got a call the night before to say, actually, it's going to have to be in the morning. It was on a Thursday, so we had Paul Lambert press conference, player press conference at midday, so it wasn't ideal. Mm. I had to rush straight from there. Andy was abroad, sadly, otherwise he would have been involved in all of this. But got there at about 10:30. They said, get there at 10:30. We'll aim for an 11 o'clock start, but Marcus is notoriously late, so be prepared to wait. Got there at 10:30, sat in reception, having a nice chat with various people coming and going through reception, feeling very nervous about it all. And 11 o'clock rolled around, and then 11:15 rolled around, and then eventually, not long after that, Steve Pearce, the press officer. I feel like I do Steve a disservice by calling him press officer. He's more of a... His role is a bit more grandiose than that. Head of communications or something would be a bit more.
He has a lot of fingers and a lot of pies at that football club as well.
He's a good lad.
A vital cog.
He's a good lad.
He played a big role in setting this up for me. So my thanks to him. He came and summons me up. I go up the stairs into the boardroom. Yeah.
So just again for the people, the benefit of the people. So is Marcus? Has he got a secretary? Is there an office? Is he physically got an office? Or?
Yeah, there's like a little. a little sort of secretarial area that Claire, who kind of works as the secretary role for both the MD and you've got Stuart Hayton just off in a side room, who's the club secretary, and through that area there, and then the boardroom is the area for those that know Portman Road. When you go down that main driveway where the field turf is, it's the bit that juts out just above main reception. That's the boardroom.
The blue clad box.
Yeah. So if you look up there on a match day, you will quite often, Marcus is there more often than not. You'll probably see the back of his head, because his desk, his area of working is the bit closest to the window there.
Yeah. So the interview wasn't actually done in his office per se, it was actually in the boardroom.
That the boardroom is his office, okay. I think. Yeah.
So you walk in, strong handshake from Marcus Evans, that's important.
Yeah, this was my key question, actually. Yeah. What kind of handshake are we?
Very impressive handshake. Yeah. We've discussed this before on podcasts. There's nothing worse than a wet lettuce handshake where your hand just sort of melts out the other person's hand. That's a big no-no. So as you can imagine, it got the balance right. Firm, but not over firm, because you can go the other way.
There wasn't the sort of grasp of the arm.
The domineering sort of handshake. No, just a good solid handshake, and immediately sort of put me at ease. Where, you know, I've been told by lots of people over the years, I've interviewed loads of people, and you're always asking, what's Marcus like? Because we're trying to build up a picture of who this kind of mysterious owner is. And you will say, everyone tells us that, you know, he's a nice guy. He's very personable. I think a lot of people that know him have always said to him, do more publicly, Marcus, because people will like you and you should do more. And I found him very much to be that case. They were having a conversation when I first walked in. Leo Neal had just left at the time, who seems to be very much almost Marcus's right-hand man now with his new title. And he said, oh, we've just been chatting about the Leeds game back in, you know, it's the last game of the season at Portman Road last January. They gave Leeds loads of extra seats along that. Help me with the stand name.
Cobbold.
I still can't get my head around the names of the stands. The Cobbold stand, opposite where we sit. They gave Leeds loads of extra fans, and it created a really good atmosphere that day. And they were chatting about whether we should be doing the same again, because Leeds might be pushing for still have promotion to go for. Ipswich still might be fighting relegation, and it's a bit of a balance in that what to do there. So we had a little bit of an off the record chat about that beforehand, and then we got into it.
I also asked the important stuff. What was he wearing? How did he smell? Did he? Because he's worth £750 million at least, isn't he? Something like that. I'd imagine rich folks often have extremely expensive aftershaves. So you can tell the quality. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You can smell it's quality stuff. Mm. And I assume he's wearing the best tailored suit.
Didn't notice the smell, I have to say.
That's probably okay.
Yeah.
I had my Terra Hermes on, which nice. is that's my favourite scent at the moment. Got to go big. You've seen from the pictures, dressed smartly. He didn't have his suit jacket on, just white shirt, crisp tie.
That was a crisp white shirt. A good white shirt.
Yeah, proper cufflinks.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah,
I
very
like
much
that.
So. Yeah. That's a touch of class, yeah.
So you settled down?
Yeah.
Was it literally, so you had a little off-the-record chat to begin with, just a bit of chat back and forth, which I suppose we can't share, can we?
We're talking about the Leeds game. Yeah. I think he's of the opinion that he doesn't want to give away any home advantage with those games. So I think, you know, they could easily look to monetize it because Leeds fans would probably fill the ground if they had a chance. But I think he wants to give Ipswich the maximum home advantage as possible. He looked back, basically, there was a bit of a... I think there's mixed opinions on this within the club, and I think Marcus is of the opinion that, yes, it was a great atmosphere for that game last time, but let's not forget that a Leeds player got sent off for headbutting Jonas Knudsen from memory, and then Ipswich went on to win the game 1-0, and it's all very well to come away from that saying that was a great atmosphere. Mm. And the players love playing in front of a proper atmosphere, which they do, but it might be a little bit different set of circumstances this time. If this is a win to stay up scenario, you don't want to be giving Leeds fans any extra chance. But yeah, that was, you know, genuinely, he seems to be someone that wants everyone's opinion on stuff and wanted to know what mine was, and we had a bit of a chat about that and eased our way into it. They went off to get a photographer to take some pictures. Not very comfortable with that, I have to say. I'm not either, but he hates having his picture taken. I hate having my picture taken.
Me too.
So they kind of just did that naturally while the interview was going on. There was a handshake picture at the end which didn't make it into print. We stood there and did the shaky hands picture. But I don't think either of us were particularly comfortable with that being used. Yeah. I think, does it give off the right image, both for club and for us, that, you know, we're almost becoming too pally here, and they don't want that to be the image, we don't want that to be the image, and that's certainly not the case. So that's why that picture didn't make it into print.
Okay, so then you go on the record. So again, paint the picture for us. You're sitting there, have you got your questions in front of you? Have you committed them to memory? You've got two recording devices on the desk, I noticed, as well.
Yeah, just as backup. Yeah. You're never quite sure if one's going to fail.
As you came back and none of it had taped. You only had one.
No. I had to put down one quite rapidly because the off-the-record chat, it became very clear to me that he was itching to get what he'd got in his mind out. Yeah. And some of it was starting to come out, so I thought, right, get that started. You know, that I was talking, you know, it was just I understand you're going to try and be about a little bit more. That was just what I thought was the off the record chat, and off he went into his spiel about, you know, the on the record stuff. So
and you said the very first answer that he gave was lengthy.
Yeah, it was two or three in. I mean, the first one was meant to be a human aspect of Marcus, and warm-up. We talked about the order, the warm-up question. Yeah, you know, there's a feeling out there that you don't care, that you've lost interest. Tell me how many games you get to. How do you follow games when you're not there? He largely ignored that question and went straight into his, you know, I understand that he probably had things in his mind that he wanted to get out there, but off he went in terms of talking about the things that he's been trying to change. And one of those early answers, I listened back to it, was 10 plus minutes uninterrupted.
Wow. That's more of a lecture.
Yeah.
Speech.
Yeah, so then at that point, we're already sort of running a little bit late. We've started at about, by the time they got in there, 4:15, the proper stuff didn't start maybe till 25 past, and then I got a 10 minute uninterrupted answer, which was interesting, but I'm very aware that, with the greatest respect, it's the dry stuff. Yeah. You know, fans want to get to the investment and are you going to sell and where's the future of this club? And so then at that point, I'm starting to look frantically at my long list of questions.
Yeah.
and I'm starting to scratch some of these off and thinking, right, we're going to have to we're going to have to skip past that because we're going to have to get into the meat of this pretty quickly. Yeah. So that's why we delve straight in from there into the investment stuff.
Can I just, before we get further into this, obviously the accusations previously when Marcus has put stuff out via the club is that he already knows the questions and he's basically scripted the answers. He knows what he's going to say. Mm. What can we say about this interview? Because in terms of the questions you asked and the answers he gave, that certainly wasn't the case, was it?
No, it's a face-to-face interview. I think you can read from the answers that they're natural. I've tried to transcribe it faithfully, you know, word for word, so that if there are pauses or bits where he kind of rambles and trails off and then picks up another thought again, I've transcribed that faithfully because I think that's important that it was shown to be what it was, a natural sort of to and fro interview. You'll see points where I didn't do it a huge amount, but I did interject at times where he was, you know, I felt there was a follow-up question that was needed. So no, the questions weren't pre-approved. I'll be honest enough to say that I had a chat with Steve Pearce, the press officer, to give him an idea of some of the themes and topics that would be covered beforehand. But no, there was no pre-approved questions. It was pretty obvious the stuff that was going to be asked, to be honest, in terms of your money's not enough, are you going to sell, what's going to happen with relegation, stuff like that. So the stuff I was asking, I'm pretty sure we'd have known that I was coming to the table with that. Yeah. But no, certainly nothing that was off the record. The only thing that I was told that it wasn't worth going down that route with was the arrest warrant stuff regarding Rio and the Olympics. You know, I said that I'm going to have to ask that, and I was told, well, the response will be it's an ongoing legal matter. It's not something that apparently that concerns him too much, but I would have liked to have asked that, but I was told that, you know, it would have been a straight back to that, and you know, I wanted this to focus on the football side of things, really.
Now, obviously, we can't go pretty much word for word through the whole interview because it's a long interview.
You could just read it out.
Just read it out. Go online now if you've not seen it, because it is definitely worth the read. I mean, I know 8,000 words sounds like a lot, but it's really interesting reading if you're anyway interested in Ipswich Town. I wonder, what is he like as an interviewee? Because it's being interviewed is something that obviously none of us really ever experienced. We're usually doing the interviewing.
Mm.
But there's a definite, you are kind of on the spot, as it were, and you do see some people kind of tense up and not feel comfortable in that environment. How is he as an interviewee?
The big thing that I noticed is that he's very considered about how he answers everything. There was, listening back to it, there's a long pause, not overly long, but just enough that of sort of thinking time that, you know, he was very relaxed. He was, you know, I didn't feel that he was on the back foot as an interviewee, and I've had that with enough football managers over the time to know that I think, you know, he felt that he probably knew where the questions were going to come from, but just very considered and just takes those extra minute second just to gather your thoughts. And a couple of times he'd go to answer, then he would stop and compose himself and just double check. And that's probably the sign of someone who's worked in business that just knows that you have to be decisive with some of the things you say, but also just check that in your mind that you're right before leaping into it. So that was my biggest observation.
And were there any bits where, as an interviewer, you felt tension? I mean, those who watch your latter interviews with Whit McCarthy will know that whenever Stu was about to ask a question at a press conference, McCarthy grabbed his water bottle and throttled it, and then you could tell that whatever was going to happen was going to be a bit tense. But there was all fairly kind of convivial, was it? And there was no times when you thought, well, I'm going to have to like get a bit harder on this sort of stuff.
No, and I didn't feel any tension, and I think that's because there was a little bit of a chat beforehand, but I think he knew that was coming. I'd made it clear that, you know, he's done enough bits with the club website now, and rightly or wrongly, the opinion out there was that, you know, that was scripted and in-house and propaganda, which I don't fully buy into. You know, I think they have asked him a lot of the questions that people wanted answering, but I think it was important in this instance that just to do it with somebody different and independent, and for it to be seen as a natural to and fro, I think as has done him a world of good, I think, amongst supporters. But no, I didn't feel a sense of tension there. There was a couple of times that, you know, I'd ask something a little bit more pressing in terms of, well, that's all very well and good saying that, Marcus, about the budget is enough, but the reality is you're bottom of the Championship and heading towards League One. And there was a little sort of a wry smile or a laugh, or, you know, when I was asking him about the tax thing and stuff like that. But I wouldn't go as far as saying pension, definitely not.
This is going to sound stupid for the owner of a football club, but reading it back, I was actually surprised by how much he seemed to know about football and how kind of in-depth he obviously goes in terms of bringing up players and clubs and, you know.
Well, I think that's part of the reason he's not done this before, that I think he's been wary that he'd make himself look a bit silly in terms of getting a player's name wrong or getting some sort of basic football knowledge wrong that football fans would jump upon. But to me, that's a sign that he's grown to love football and know football a lot more as time has gone on. You know, there was a reference to Ryan Sessegnon at Fulham and Sheffield United squad and getting the best out of Billy Sharp and just little things that just sort of dropped in there to me that was proof that, you know, he's got a bug for football and he loves football. And then this mental image of him sitting there scouring through Sheffield United squad list, things like that, you know, that's a sign that this isn't someone that's just not interested in football and doesn't care. I think he's got the bug. I mean, I know that it's not something that he wanted to talk about on the record, but his family have got the bug. I think his teenage daughter, who was a bit younger when he bought the club, has grown up really, really enthused by Ipswich and going to all the games and talking to him about it around the breakfast table and stuff like that. So,
Hutchie, can I come to you? You're being very quiet, necessarily so. Of the three of us in this room, you are the only genuine Ipswich Town fan. Obviously, me and Stu have a great affinity for the club, having lived here and covered, Stu certainly covered the, and I, Ipswich Town's the first result I always look for now. But you're a genuine fan. So for, as a fan, if you could take you away from your journalist hat, if you like, what stood out for you from the interview? What was most interesting for you?
In a weird way, my supporting of Ipswich Town kind of ended when Marcus bought the club, because it's almost exactly around the time where I moved away from here, like a couple of years later. So that's a time when Ipswich, it left me a bit, and I've worked in this industry for 10 years or so and I haven't been an Ipswich fan in that time. Mm. But reading it, the one thing that I came away from it thinking is that there's a man in charge of this football club now who is doing the right things by Ipswich Town. He has his principles and he won't stray from them, but he seems to me to be a trustworthy man, an honest man, and a man who does what he thinks is right in a responsible way. You look at so many other football clubs which have ended up in horrible, horrible messes, and it made me feel that Ipswich wouldn't be one of those under his stewardship. That doesn't mean that things won't be horrible on the pitch, but in terms of away from the pitch, under his stewardship, that wouldn't be happening to Ipswich Town. And to me, that's kind of the bottom line of what you want from your owner: responsible, honest, and making the right decisions responsibly. And, and I came away from reading a man that would do that as underpinning everything that he does. And sure, I think I would take exception to some of the things that he says about the level of budget and where that can put Ipswich competitively. But on a pure responsibility community level, I don't think you can read that and not feel that, like, he's a responsible man to own the football club.
I mean, for me, as well as a lot of interesting points, what came across, I thought he came across really well through the words. As I say, knowledgeable about football, extremely sensible, grounded, got a plan going forward. For you, Stewie, what stood out for you from, if you can pick out a few points from an 8,000 word interview?
Yeah.
Did you were there ever answers where you thought, that's interesting, that's something I've not heard before? Or?
Yeah, I don't think there was anything sort of revelationary in there, but I wasn't really expecting that to be the case. For me, it was about him being able to speak a bit more naturally in his own words, and for maybe to just for him to be humanised a little bit in terms of, you know, towards the end, the line in there about Muhammad Ali, and I'm the man who's been knocked out by Muhammad Ali and I have to get up and go into the next fight. Managers can be battered and bruised by football, but then they go and they go somewhere else. As an owner, you don't have that option. And that was actually part of a off the record chat at the end. And we had a discussion after the interview subsequently, and I said, look, this is one of the nicest bits in here that humanises you, and you know, it was agreed, okay, yeah, let's include that in. And that's probably when he started to relax a little bit more. And I think if you'd have had longer with Marcus, I think it was only towards the end, and then it was like, okay, yeah, great, thanks for that, and we'll have anything you want to know off the record. And we had a chat about a few things, and that's when that came out, and I thought, look, leave that in, you know, people will like that. And so that was genuine. That was him speaking from the heart when that bit came out. But yeah, as Andy says, I think, listen, you can question his notion that I still believe a conservative budget works in the Championship. I think people can pull that to pieces a little bit and say, well, the proof is in the pudding here at the moment. You're on a budget of 14th, 15th in the division. You're effectively waiting for lightning to strike. Last April, he used the example of, well, Millwall and Preston this year are examples of how you can do it. Well, fast forward 12 months and Millwall and Preston have gone backwards. Ipswich had their sixth place finish. They've gone backwards. So you're really hoping for lightning to strike for this sort of approach. You've got to, everything has got to come together. You've got to have some players come through from the academy. You've got to have a manager that kind of makes it all work and come together. You've got to have kind of got a little bit lucky in terms of some lower league signings coming good. You're waiting for lightning to strike, absolutely, aren't you? And but that is what it is, and that's basically what Marcus said. You know, I won't and I can't put in more money than this. You know, football is littered with clubs that have got, someone's come in, promised to do amazing things, 20 million year one, 20 million year two, year three, oof, don't fancy this anymore, and off they trot, and they pass it on to the next person who does exactly the same. And in many ways, it's quite laudable that Marcus doesn't want to do that. I would rather do 5-6 million year after year, consistently stable, and see where that takes us. And I know consistent and stable are not sexy words, but at least he's been honest enough to say.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, in terms of things that actually did stand out for the interview, I thought it was quite interesting talking about January 2015 and the decision not to invest back then. It's not really been kind of talked about before. I mean, Can we talk a little bit about that? What he said about that?
Yeah, basically, he kind of checked himself a little bit on that one, because the initial answer was a bit more along the lines of, well, I wanted to do everything to maximise that opportunity, and the manager didn't feel he wanted to spend the money, and he kind of edited himself very quickly on that in terms of, well, I'm sure if Mick had millions, he would have gone out and done more, but within the parameters of what we could spend at that time, it was Mick McCarthy's decision not to add more than he did. Freddie Sears was obviously the main bit of business, but there wasn't a huge amount beyond that. Noel Hunt obviously came in and made an impact, but I got the sense, just through body language and the way he answered that, that there probably is more regrets there in terms of not doing more to strengthen from a position of strength. But ultimately, that feeds back into his mantra that you allow your managers to manage, and you know, you don't interfere. You select your manager and then you let them get on with it. You don't interfere with them. And if they feel that there's not anyone out there that can strengthen you and might upset the dynamic of the squad, you trust in them to do that. If you go and appoint Paul Hurst, you then back him to do whatever business he wants to do. There's no point interfering in what they do. And that kind of makes sense, really, doesn't it?
And that was part, I mean, obviously, when you talk about Marcus Evans and criticisms that people have, that's one that still gets brought up. Why didn't you invest when Town were second in the table in January 2015 when it got up, etc., etc.? So obviously you put that to him, but you also put quite a few other common criticisms to him as well. And how did he sort of take those? Was he, you say he's obviously expecting those kind of questions.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Though he certainly didn't sort of bristle or balk at any of the suggestions. That the tax one was kind of laughed off, really, in many ways. He just sort of said, I don't really... He wouldn't answer directly the how much do you actually save by offsetting... by offsetting losses made by Ipswich Town against profits he makes in his various other businesses. Mm. How much do you save by doing that? You know, and he didn't answer directly, but basically said, I can 100% say that owning Ipswich Town Football Club does not have any sort of tax benefits there. And if you think about it, you know, he's right. To get that money back, you've got to put more money into Ipswich in the first place. So, you know, the bottom line is he is losing money year after year after year. And the debt is 95 million. That debt is owed to him. It's effectively a loss, and he's confirmed that. You know, it's money that he's continually having to prop up the club with extra funds every year, because what they bring in, like any football club, goes nowhere near to the outgoings. Mm. Your gate receipts, your merchandise, all of that. I mean, that doesn't even cover the wage bill before you get onto any other associated costs.
Mm. Mm. So, in terms of other things that stood out for me from said interview, there was also obviously the line that a lot of people pick up on about he could have sold the club. He's had a couple of credible offers, and he's glad he didn't. Obviously, he couldn't name names, as it were, in terms of those offers, but he did say they'd gone on to buy other clubs, and a few of them weren't even in football anymore.
And the club's relegated.
I mean, I thought that was really interesting. Your thoughts on that?
That, for me, was the most interesting part of it.
Yeah.
Because that proved that if he was truly fed up of losing money year after year, he could have been out of here a long time ago, you know. And he's chosen not to do that because he's got the best interests of the club at heart. He refuses to leave it. Basically, unless somebody comes on with mega money, and not only mega money, but if he was to sell this club, they would have to commit on paper to a set number of years that they would be prepared to put X amount in. So if he's putting in £5-6 million a year, A, you've got to show that you're going to put in more than that. But B, more importantly, you've got to prove that you will do that over a consistent period of time. It's not like, I'll come in and I'll do X amount in year one and year two and we'll see where that takes us. Mm. Because he said, otherwise, unless they do that, they're not really going to be doing anything much different to what I'm doing now. Mm.
Mm. So, you've done the interview. How long are you in there for, total, with him?
About an hour.
Yeah?
About an hour, yeah.
And at no point did you feel like you weren't getting the wind-up signal or anything like that?
So it was kind of me that sort of brought it to a close, because I just thought, you know, that was a decent period of time, and
I had to
get up the training ground, so I jumped straight in my car, drove up to Playford Road, walked in midway through James Collins' first answer, and Dale jumped into that press conference, straight into a Facebook Live with Paul Lambert, which I probably was less prepared for than usual.
How did you feel... I'll ask this question, and again, it's a peek behind the curtain. Stewie is, as you know, very, very methodical and analytical. I'm like many people who are good at what they do, you're quite self-critical quite a lot of the time. Mm. So, post-interview, did you come out feeling that you were largely happy with what you got?
I was really nervous going into it, I'll be honest enough about that. And then immediately you come out of it thinking, did I ask enough? Did I ask the right questions? Should I have asked this? There's loads of stuff. I've got my list of questions here. There's loads of stuff that I would have wanted to ask. You know, your estimated wealth is X amount. Is that anywhere near true? And how much of that is actually accessible to you? I wanted to talk about Paul. I didn't really talk enough about Paul Lambert and the impact that Paul's had, and whether he's been putting more pressure on him to do certain things. The contract situation, you could start talking about that with the players coming out of contracts, the reliance on loans, tons of stuff that I could have asked. But to be honest, that could have gone on for hours, couldn't it? Every one of those questions could have probably become an hour long topic of conversation in itself. So yeah, beat myself up a little bit about it straight away afterwards. But yeah, quite pleased with the response to it. I think, you know, within that allowed allotted time, I think, yeah, I think there was a broad range of topics covered. So, yeah, we'll see. Maybe we'll get a part two further down the line.
Yeah,
well, then he can come on the podcast.
Absolutely, that would be amazing. What's the response been like generally from fans, guys? What have you seen? Has it been pretty positive overall, hasn't it, from what
have you felt, Andy?
I think so. I think people have their own set idea of Marcus Evans, and some people's minds will have been changed by what they've read in this.
Yeah.
Some won't. But I think overall, I think the biggest thing that was picked to pieces, like we've already discussed, is the idea that the budget that Ipswich are on can achieve the goal that they're talking about achieving. And, you know, that's up for debate, and the proof is that hasn't worked. But I think in general, I think it was well received. I think the whole reason for doing this was to be more personal, to get to know Marcus a little bit, and I think that's what's come out of it. I think people will see that and have seen that, and their opinion of Marcus in that regard will have improved, I think.
It's also another little nice touch, again, a little hint behind the scenes, but you said that he had a calculator in front of him and he was sort of tapping away on that all the time.
Yeah, that was the sort of wage versus transfer fees debate. They're talking about, well, one of the common criticisms is that you rake in this money for Mings and Murphy and Connor Wickham and whoever else, Cresswell, and that it doesn't get reinvested. So he reached across at that point and said, well, it's quite simple, actually. And in very clear layman's terms, grabbed his little calculator and started tapping away and literally doing those sums that you see in the piece. You know, 15,000 a year times by 52 weeks times by 3 equals, that's £2.3 million over the course of a contract. And I do think we get obsessed with transfer fees in football. It's always about net spend and you've brought in this, and people forget that the big chunk of money is on a wage. I mean, Mick McCarthy, yes, it was all loans and it was frees and it was his 110 grand team against Norwich in the playoff semi-finals, but we overlook the fact that people like Leon Best and Cameron Stewart probably came in on decent money. If you worked out sort of pound per minute played, there was some flops in there as well, and Mick got a lot of things right, and there were some really cracking free transfer signings along the way, of course there were, but you can't overlook that other side of things as well. So he basically said that there's a set budget, manager spends it as they see fit. If they want to do transfer fees and less wages, i.e. Paul Hurst, they can. If they want to do frees and bigger wages, i.e. Mick McCarthy, they can do that.
Yeah. If you could, like, you mentioned Leon Best there. Compare Leon Best, two Ipswich number nines, Leon Best, Caden Jackson. I'd be shocked if Leon Best didn't cost Ipswich as much as Caden has, all things considered.
Interview comes to an end then. Another handshake at the end, Stewie?
We did the little shaky hands.
Was there another handshake?
Pictures side by side. But yeah. No, that was about it, really.
Did he say anything to you as you left? Like, don't stitch me up or anything like that?
nothing like that, really. I sort of just, the final question was, you know, he said, oh, have you got, you know, I said, are you happy with that? And yes, and, you know, is there anything else you want to ask? And so it was a bit like, are you happy with it? And, you know, is there anything else you want to say? You know, this is your platform. And that's where that last line came from. My biggest frustration is this idea. That was his last answer, was my biggest frustration is that there's this idea that we are continually underinvested and it will mean that we are destined to always go backwards. He is very strong in that idea that his budget doesn't necessarily mean that Ipswich are going to go backwards. I think he doesn't believe Ipswich are bottom because of money. He believes they're bottom because they got their transfer dealings wrong last summer.
Okay. Guys, we better start wrapping this up because Stewie has got to go off to a press conference. Obviously, it's transfer deadline day as well. I know you're both kind of checking your phones as we sit here. Anything going on?
Shane McLaughlin has joined AFC Wimbledon.
There you go, so breaking news on the podcast.
Okay.
All round entertainment.
That was about half an hour ago.
Slightly slow breaking news.
I'll just go back to the extra stuff we could have asked. I mean, season tickets would have been on there. That would have been very interesting to see how he plans to price those going forwards, given how Lambert's put pressure on him to reduce prices. And I think it's going to be important to have that proverbial 12 man more than ever, especially if they go down. But didn't really get onto the subject of that. Stadium improvements at a very tired looking Portman Road. That would have been something to talk about. I mean, the comeback on this idea that you cannot stop players moving when a Premier League club comes calling, which I accept, but it overlooks the fact that Waghorn's gone to Derby, that Adam Webster's gone to Bristol City. So Ipswich aren't just losing their best players to Premier League clubs now, they're losing them to other clubs within the Championship. And so, you know, if I had that chance again, I would maybe sort of push that point a little bit more. But no, in general, as I say, I think we covered a lot of bases in that period of time, hopefully.
Hutchie, anything else to address, talk about?
No other business.
Stewie, anything else you want to mention?
No other business.
So all that leaves me to say really is, again, thanks for joining us. I hope you have enjoyed this peek behind the curtain. That's what we're all about. Entertainment, information, and giving you a little insight behind the curtain of Portman Road and behind the working lives of sporting journalists. I do just want to say thanks very much for the iTunes, 5-star iTunes reviews. We've had a few since the last podcast. I've just got a shout out. Mr. McBear, Tyson's Dribble, Jesney Hawks, and I Am Spartacus 789. I've got to take issue though with I Am Spartacus, who I think is Matt, who I talk with boxing about quite a lot, because he's only given us a 4-star review.
Ooh.
4-star. Controversial, my friend. He says Cliff, Hutch and Steve elucidate their views on the best team in Suffolk, whilst adding a side salad of genuinely amusing anecdotes and insight from the journalistic end of the binoculars. Please let us know how we can get an extra star, because that seems like quite a positive review to me. Seems a bit harsh than getting 4.
That's like when you give the customer survey anything less than an 8. They get in trouble if they get anything less than an 8.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's the scale. Well, I think we're going to get in trouble.
Well, without our lords and masters. Obviously, hit subscribe on your various podcast providers. Make sure you get this on your phone or wherever you get it as soon as it goes out. There'll be another one. We'll be back to normal podcast from Monday. I'm not actually here Monday, so I assume it'll just be you two. Maybe even get the big porker involved. That could be good. And also, as I say, if you can leave us a 5-star iTunes review, that'd be great, because it really helps with our visibility on the iTunes chart. Trying to get us above the Kings of Leon podcast, that'd be fantastic. And also, obviously, I want to say thanks to our very new sponsor, John Banks Honda. I've got to say, look out for the John Banks Ride and Drive event coming soon near to you. That's johnbanks.co.uk. That's johnbanks.co.uk. I hope you've enjoyed this little peek behind the Marcus Evans interview curtain. Stewie, it's been good.
Sorry for talking too much today.
Literally the concept of today's podcast was that you talk a lot.
Downbeat than usual. Usual service will be resumed and we'll talk about being naked in videos and
boilers,
stuff like that.
That'll come back on.
I like the idea that Marcus may be tempted to listen to this and then listen to like another one and hear the about crisps. And
that's the one he should listen to. If he's going to listen to one, he should listen to the crisp one. I wonder what his favourite crisps are. Does a man that rich even eat crisps?
Good.
I reckon he's eating crisps.
Yeah. Gold dust crisps. Overrated gold. Anyway.
Is that Stewie? A thing?
Huh?
Is that a thing?
Gold. Yeah. Have you not seen the you can get like pizzas for 15 grand that've got gold?
Oh yeah, bottoms. You're an idiot if you buy them.
Exactly.
I bet he doesn't do any of that.
More money than sense. Well, no, he's proper rich.
Yeah, he's a proper rich person.
Absolutely. Stewie, good to have you with us today. Very interesting chat. Thanks very much. On behalf of all the Kings of Anglia Army and myself and Hutch, I'd like you to say goodbye, please.
Goodbye, please.
Hutchie?
Yeah.
Good having you sitting next to me,
yeah,
being quite quiet.
I've not contributed very much to this, but goodbye.
Well, we're merely passengers today. I've been Mark Keith as ever. Thanks very much for joining us, and join us again next week.